From the Reynolds Journalism Institute at the University of Missouri, welcome to Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. Sunday, November 8th, is an historic day in the country of Myanmar, also known as Burma. It marks the first time in almost three decades that a democratic general election will take place. The last time it happened was in 1990, but the Southeast Asian nation's military junta annulled the results of that poll, arrested all opposition leaders, and took over the government. The military dictatorship officially ended in 2011, but most of the ruling party leaders are former military officers. One of the biggest opponents of the military rule was and is Aung San Suu Kyi, the chairperson of the National League for Democracy. She was placed under house arrest for 15 years and was finally released in 2011. And while Myanmar has made strides in its democratic process, some of the challenges it faces are reflected in its treatment of the press. It's ranked among the 10 most censored countries in 2015 by the Committee to Protect Journalists. Reporters there are routinely threatened, intimidated, and arrested for reporting on sensitive issues. On this edition of Global Journalist, we'll preview the elections in Myanmar to see if they'll help democracy finally take hold and examine how the media climate there is shaping its politics. Our guest this week from Washington, D.C., Michael Thurston. He was the U.S. State Department's former chief of mission to Myanmar from 2011 to 2012. Also in D.C., Priscilla Clapp, senior advisor to the U.S. Institute of Peace and the Asia Society. She was also the State Department's chief of mission in Myanmar from 1999 to 2002. And in Yangon, Myanmar, Maureen Aung Thuynh. She's the director of the Burma program at the Open Society Foundation. Thanks to all of you for joining us on Global Journalist. Maureen Aung Thuynh, you've been in Myanmar for about a month now, getting a sense of the election. What's the mood there? What's life like on the streets ahead of this landmark poll?
The streets are quite lively. It's you can tell that an election is coming. But in a way, you don't see all the parties. That the most active group is the NLD. They are going around in like floats with bands on the top of them.
This is Aung San Suu Kyi's party, the National League for Democracy.
This is Aung San Suu Kyi's party, and they're all dressed in red, which is their color, with usually emblazoned with a fighting peacock, a yellow fighting peacock. And they've composed a very catchy song for the NLD, for their party. And it's like, once you hear it, you sort of can't get it out of your mind. You keep humming it all day. But they're very noisy, and they've been holding like huge rallies wherever the government will allow them to hold the rally. So it's interesting, on Sunday, they wanted to hold a rally in a big football area, and they weren't allowed to, so they had to switch to another place near a pagoda. But they still attracted approximately 40,000. And what's amazing is that at the same time that they're letting some of this happen, they're also arresting some, I wouldn't even call them citizen journalists, just innocent citizens who, everybody uses Facebook in Burma, and some people have been posting satirical cartoons or, you know, little bits of news about basically making fun of the ruling party and the regime. And they've been arrested for putting things on Facebook, basically. So it's a mixture of, you know, exuberance and acting like a normal country having an election. And then they've been the people are being put away.
Michael Thurston, you were in Myanmar during this transition representing the U.S. government. Aung San Suu Kyi obviously is the figure that most people in the West have heard of when it comes to Burmese politics. But no matter what happens in these elections, she won't become president. So tell us about that. Why is that?
Well, there's a constitutional provision that would prevent anybody who has a child carrying a foreign passport, foreign-born, or carrying a foreign passport from becoming president. And certainly that applies to her. She has two children who carry British passports. And it would seem to be a provision in the Constitution that pretty much was put in place to prevent her from assuming the office of the presidency. So we'll have to see what they do. Can they change the Constitution subsequently? Military has, 25% of the seats, so it'll be hard to change the Constitution. But we'll just have to see what's going to happen. I think we're stepping into an area of the great unknown. As we move forward.
And so if her party is victorious in the elections and she is the leader of that party, she won't become president. But what will her role be?
Well, I can only describe what she has said. And she has said that she'd still be on top. She's the leader of her party. And if her party wins, presumably they'll put forward a candidate. And she has said that whoever the candidate is, she'll be the one who's actually running things.
So she'll be over the president then, in other words.
Well, those are the words that are ascribed to her. We're going to have to see how that works out and how that plays out going forward. But we also don't know what other sorts of things are happening in the background. There have been discussions that other things are going on. Other discussions have taken place between the current president, Thein Sein, between the former head of the Hutlau, Tuah Sweiman. We don't know. I think that's one of the more interesting aspects of this is if an election goes forward, if it's mostly free and fair, what is the outcome going to be as they move forward? And I think that's the great unknown. That's what we're going to have to see play out. They've not done this in a very long time.
And Priscilla Clapp, you were the top U.S. diplomat in Myanmar in the late 90s, early 2000s. This was sort of during the dark days of the junta. Give us just a sense of what the government, what the climate was like there then, and, you know, what is the significance of what's happening now?
Well, it was a very repressive military regime when I was there, and the capital was still in Yangon. The streets were often taken over by military motorcades. The military was very much in control. It was everywhere. We were followed all the time by military intelligence. All of that is gone now. The capital has been moved to Naypyidaw. It's a very different place. Yangon is more or less free of the military presence. It's outside the city, not really in the center of the city so much anymore. During the days that I was there, any talk of politics, even the study of political science in universities and schools, was prohibited. And people who did participate in political discussion were very often jailed. So now the government, in spite of its other autocratic characteristics, is encouraging political science and the study of political science and political discussion. So it's a very different mood in the country. And with these elections going on, politics is quite lively. It's basically healthy for a society that is trying to learn how to be democratic.
This is Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. This week, we're discussing landmark elections in Myanmar and the political and media climate in the Southeast Asian nation. Joining us from Washington, D.C. is Michael Thurston. He was the U.S. State Department's former chief of mission to Myanmar from 2011 to 2012. Also in Washington, Priscilla Clapp, who held the same job in Myanmar from 1999 to 2002. She's now a senior advisor at the U.S. Institute for Peace. And in Yangon, Myanmar, is Maureen Aung Thuynh. She's the director of the Burma program at the Open Society Foundation. A reminder that if you're interested in more Global Journalist content, visit us online at globaljournalist.org. There you can read in-depth articles on international affairs and free press issues and download past episodes from our archive. We're also on social media. You can like us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter at Global Journ. Maureen Aung Thuynh, Michael Thurston was discussing earlier that there is something of a mystery as to who will actually be president, who will be running the country if the National League for Democracy does win, if Aung San Suu Kyi's party does win in Sunday's elections, and she is barred from becoming president. Tell us, what are you hearing in Yangon?
Well, one hears lots of rumors and gossip, but it's likely that if the NLD does win a large landslide or even a certain amount, enough that it's inevitable that they will get to not only choose who will go into government, but they will have a say in nominating one of the three vice presidents who then are voted by the parliament, the new parliament, and the top vote getter of the three people would get to be president. So if one of their candidates has a third of a chance of getting in, there's a chance that they will be able to influence. I mean, they'll be able to, quote, run the country. Who it is, I could name some names, but I don't know if it'll make any sense to your listeners. But there are people who are close to the NLD who have some amount of gravitas, and I'd say some of them sound like they would make excellent presidents.
Well, to pick up on something that you mentioned earlier, you had talked about there being people were being arrested, citizen journalists, even people just using social media in Myanmar, being arrested for posting criticism or satire about the government there now. Do you get the sense that there is a fear that there could be some violence on Election Day or in the aftermath of the elections?
There's always, yes, there's always a fear that some disgruntled people or some agents provocateurs might you know, stir up some problems to keep people from going to vote. A lot of people already not getting to vote. You know, the Rohingya Muslims are not they're not allowed to vote. There are people in certain areas hit by recent floods. They just say you can't get at it, so you can't vote. There have been people with temporary ID cards that have suddenly been told that they can't vote. So, and they're making it quite hard for a lot of other, there are a lot of Burmese all around, you know, migrant workers and whatnot. And I'm not quite sure whether that's deliberately like trying to stop people who might have voted NLD, but it seems like there are quite a few people who are not getting, who are disenfranchised. But as far as, you said something about violence, it's sort of quiet here. I'm quite surprised. I think part of the reason is many people have gone back home to vote. So there's not a lot of activity. There are these floats that I told you about going around and, you know, singing election songs. But that's about it.
Well, Michael Thurston, you were you worked for the State Department during the time of this transition. I presume that you were in contact with the government of Thein Sein, who is a candidate in this election. Give us just a sense of him and his background. He was part of the military junta. What are his sort of feelings about democracy? How likely is he to hand over power peacefully if his party loses the election?
Well, you know, I used to meet with him, Thein Sein and Shwemon and some of the other leaders on a pretty regular basis. But I can't say that I know their hearts. I can only tell you what they've, you know, what they've told us in their public proclamations, which have been fairly consistent, that they will allow a peaceful transition to occur. I think what really one of the things to watch out for is how threatened does the junta, does the government feel, the former military, how threatened do they feel by a change? Because I think that's going to impact their likely response. I think we had a bit of a preview in 2012, April, with the by-election, in which a fair number of seats were up. And they allowed a free and fair election to go ahead, and we were able to observe it unencumbered, pretty much wherever we wanted, working with the international community. But what we found is that they more likely than not allowed it to go ahead in the way that they did because they thought that they would win. They were that out of touch.
So in this 2012 by-election, there were something like 45 seats that were being contested. That's right. And the NLD won something like 40 of them, Aung San Suu Kyi's party. Is that right?
The NLD won all except one.
Okay. Okay, but you're saying that this election proceeded perhaps peacefully and fairly because the junta thought they were going to win. And do you get the sense that they are under the same impression this time around or not?
I don't think so. I think they've learned that they don't have that popularity, that they can't assume that they did before. And so I think they know that it's going to be a different outcome than they anticipated previously. How will they respond to that? I think that's the key. I think Thein Sein, a couple of days ago, he's a quote, he was the press reported that he warned that, you know, against change that happens too rapidly, that against change that's not somehow controlled. So they may be feeling some anxiety as they move forward. And I think that's the real key, is that how do we assuage their anxiety so that this can move forward in a free and fair way?
Priscilla Clapp, what's your take on that?
The USDP does not expect to win a lot in this election. In fact, they're going to lose a lot of seats. They know that. They only need to maintain like 26-30% of the seats in order to still have a controlling voice in the parliament.
This is because 25% of the seats in parliament are automatically reserved for the military.
25%, right. And I think earlier when you were talking about the role of Aung San Suu Kyi after the election, don't forget that she's going to be in the parliament. and she could be the speaker of the parliament. If the NLD wins big, she could be the speaker. And so what she may be saying is that the parliament will be playing a very, very strong role in the next government. If she can't be president, she'll rule from the parliament.
Well, let me ask you, President Obama has been to Myanmar twice during his presidency. Now, from what we were able to find, that's as many times as he's visited Canada, as many times as he's visited Russia. He's made this a really big priority for his administration. Can you give us a sense as to how effective the U.S. has been in advocating for its interests there, and what exactly are the U.S. interests in Myanmar right now?
Well, U.S. interests in Myanmar have changed a lot because of this opening, because of the transition that's underway. It's making the country much more of a player in Southeast Asia, with the U.S. looking more and more to its interests in Asia now, Southeast Asia has become a very important part of our strategy, and Myanmar will be sitting right in the middle of that equation. So I think it means more today to the U.S. than it did 10 years ago. And it is a balance within ASEAN against China. It is ASEAN's longest land frontier with China, Myanmar is. And it's the largest land-based mainland country in Southeast Asia, with it's sitting on a lot of very valuable resources. And China and many other countries would like to get their hands on them. So there's going to be more and more activity there, economic and political. And I think the United States plays a very important role in promoting the democratic development of the country. I think we're absolutely essential to that, and that we should be continuing to engage vigorously in that process.
Well, Maureen Aung Thuynh, I wanted to ask you, you had mentioned earlier in the show the difficulties that the Rohingya, this ethnic Muslim group in northern Myanmar, had. They're not, by and large, not voting, not allowed to vote in this election. Al Jazeera had recently run a piece calling this Myanmar's Muslim-free election, and it had noted that actually Aung San Suu Kyi's party had ordered a purge of Muslims from the National Democracy League. It said that not one of the something like 1,100 candidates for regional and national office from her party were Muslim. This in a country where there are 3 or 4 million Muslims. Can you talk a bit about that?
Well, I read the same thing that you did. I haven't asked any NLD political people, you know, what their party policy or the line is towards Muslims. But I find this just basically a pragmatic way of dealing with a really, really hot, volatile, and potentially explosive issue. I don't know about the word purge, maybe it's a little strong. It just so happens that she hasn't commented directly about the persecution of the Rohingyas and the fact that they're not running any Muslim candidates. I don't, you know, they've been very strict about who is running under their party, because there are some other popular Democrats who wanted to run under the NLD flag, and they weren't allowed to. So I'm not defending them. I'm just thinking it's a really difficult thing, and I think everybody, the people are well, we're all losing because there's no Muslim representative at all. One of the lone Rohingya MPs was told he could not run again for election, Ushue Maung. He's abroad right now, and he's worried to go back because he's had death threats if he went back to Burma.
So, well, I want to come back to this. I do want to remind our listeners this is Global Journalist. I'm Jason McClure. This week, a look at upcoming elections in Myanmar and the climate for free expression in that country. Joining us from Washington, D.C. is Michael Thurston. He was the U.S. State Department's former chief of mission to Myanmar from 2011 to 2012. Also in Washington, Priscilla Clapp, who held the same job in Myanmar from 1999 to 2002. She's now a senior advisor at the U.S. Institute for Peace. And in Yangon, Myanmar, is Maureen Aung Thuynh. She's the director of the Burma program at the Open Society Foundation. Michael Thurston, Maureen Aung Thuynh was just discussing this issue of Muslim participation in this election and lack thereof. if you will. One of sort of the more interesting elements I found about this election is this role of this radical, these radical Buddhist monks. I think they're called the Mabata. Can you tell us just a little bit about them? Who are they? What are their goals? What's their role in this election?
I'm not really an expert on this particular group, other than, you know, what we know about them. And they're not unusual in terms of a very Buddhist country having Buddhist monks that become rather radical. We also saw this in Sri Lanka, where it was the Buddhist monks who were leading much of the opposition, violent opposition towards the Tamils within Sri Lanka. So it's not unusual, but it's not a movement that at the time that I was there had very much traction or was getting very much attention. That's a more recent development.
Well, Maureen Ong Thuynh, then, let me go back to you then. Have you seen these monks on the street? Because I understand that they are, that you have a fairly radical anti-Muslim ideology.
They have a very, very strong anti-Muslim and especially anti-Rohingya ideology. But unfortunately, most of the country also have a certain sense of Buddhism in danger. I mean, what they've done is they've stirred a pot in a very devout Buddhist society where people actually practice their religion. They don't just go, like, you know, to the pagoda as many Christians do. Just at Christmas time, they would go to church. People really live their faiths every day. And when they've been isolated for decades, and then the people they revere a lot, which is their monks, tell them that Buddhism is in danger because the Muslims are all around them. And if you don't contain them, they will take over their country. And they'll say, look at Indonesia, look at what, you know, Afghanistan, Pakistan, because of the Buddhist, the Buddhist heritage from the past, by the way. You can't find it now, but there it is. And there's a grain of truth in all that they say. You don't see them in the streets saying, I'm Mabata, but they do have rallies, and they do say very outspoken, virulent things. In fact, the UN Special Rapporteur for Human Rights, a Korean person called Professor Lee, she's a human rights lawyer, she was called a whore by this leading Buddhist monk, Uweratu, who leads that Mabata. And nobody really took him down on it. Well, so this is how bad it is.
That does sound like sort of a concerning element in this election. Priscilla Clapp, you had mentioned earlier about sort of the importance of Myanmar to U.S. policy in Southeast Asia, and you're particularly referencing that in regard to relations with China. How are the Chinese viewing this election? China did have a relationship with the junta government, did do business with them on some level. Now all of a sudden there is a multi-party election right on China's borders. What is the reaction from the Chinese government been to this?
Well, the Chinese haven't reacted directly, but they're having to adjust substantially to this. They've been doing it over the last five years because they really did not expect the transition to take this direction in Burma. They expected that there would be another autocratic government coming out of it, run by the military. And even though it is more or less that, it's far more democratic. It has far more democratic elements to it than the Chinese expected. And I think the freedom of expression that's allowed now in Burma, the diversity that's coming out is concerning to China because it spreads across the border. There's no way of preventing that. And the Chinese are concerned about having the United States and the Western countries so engaged now in Burma on their border. They see it as a backdoor into China. They see it as an attempt on the part of the West to contain China. It's a rather paranoid view on their part, but nonetheless, it is concerning to them.
And Maureen Ong Thuynh, what is sort of the media reporting about the election inside Myanmar? Obviously, there's state media. There are some independent news outlets. How are they covering the election? What are the messages that the public is hearing about the election?
Well, you know, what's interesting is at the same time as, for example, the three people who just almost in a row got arrested for posting somebody else's, you know, cartoon or story on Facebook, the media itself, both Burmese and English language, they're reporting on almost everything. They're reporting on a lot of foibles done by mostly by the ruling party and the current ruling government. They have lots of really funny cartoons. I just saw one where there's an image of a monk who's putting a ballot in the head of a person who's got a little sort of a ballot slot in top of his head. And that person is then putting a ballot in the real ballot box. Now, the monk's ballot going to the top of the person's head is green, which is the party of the ruling party. So, and then the person is putting a green ballot inside the ballot box, which means, you know, the monk's telling the person to vote for the ruling party. And there's another one I saw.
It sounds a bit contradictory in that. People are getting arrested for posting such things, and yet there's also, you see, this sort of discussion all over the place then. Is that fair to say?
Well, more than discussion, I would say satire and really making fun. And the Burmese are really, you know, they have a lot of, they have a great sense of humor and very good political satirists.
Well, so let me just turn this to Michael Thurston, Maureen, then. Our time does grow short. Michael, we have just about a minute left in the show. What do you see as some scenarios for Myanmar over the next 2 years, over the next 3 years? What are some possible outcomes for the country?
Well, the best possible outcome is that there's a free and fair election and that the government in place, the former junta, respects that outcome. And through a democratic process, the Burmese, the people of Myanmar, are able to move forward. But that's going to mean more inclusion than we typically see. For example, don't forget, we have the ethnic groups on the borders that have been struggling against the junta for many years, and some of them are on the Chinese border between China and Burma. How are they going to vote? And presumably they'll support, if they're allowed to vote, those that can get to the polls, they'll support ethnic hill tribe-based parties. Well, can Aung San Suu Kyi, can the NLD form relationships with those? She's been spending time up in some of those tribal areas trying to gain their confidence and trust, and we'll have to see. But what we're hoping for is a free and fair election, and an election in which the outcome, if the NLD is in fact the party that wins or takes the greatest number of seats, that outcome is respected.
We're going to have to leave it there for this edition of Global Journalist, a production of the Reynolds Journalism Institute and the Missouri School of Journalism. Many thanks to Michael Thurston, Priscilla Clapp, and Maureen Ong Thuyn for coming on the program. Global Journalist executive producer is Joshua Kranzberg. Our associate producers this week are Jake Godin, David Soler, Loretta Lee, Annie Rice, and Shiwei Chu. Our studio director is Travis McMillan from RJI. Our audio engineer is Pat Akers of KVIA. For all of us at Global Journalist, I'm Jason McClure. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you next time.